This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Kennison and Noel Lim. In about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Ihsan Mokhtar, president of the Malaysian Institute of Planners, on the proposal to develop Putrajaya into an international recreational city. But before that, we are taking a look at the markets.
Looking at the US markets, the Dow was up marginally 0.05%, S&P 500 up 0.2%, the Nasdaq down marginally 0.07%.
And if we take a look at Asia, it was a mixed bag. We've got the Nikkei 225 up 0.1%, but the Hang Seng was down 0.9%. To be very certain, that 0.9%. I know I mixed up a few numbers there. Shanghai was down 0.1%. Singapore's STI down 0.4%. But the FBM KLCI up 1.4%. And no, you did not mishear me. 1.4% in the green yesterday.
And for more insight into international markets, this morning we're speaking with Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, thanks so much for joining us today. So Fed officials were rather unanimous, downplaying inflation in the just released FOMC minutes. But were there any particular takeaways for you?
I think essentially the markets probably thought that the messaging out of the Fed was unsurprising. I mean, there was no element that was new or novel in there. There wasn't even a new perspective. At the end of the day, there wasn't even a new bottle to put that old wine in, and markets were probably also somewhat cognizant of the fact that the out of the ballpark hit in data recently came after the minutes. So they probably also discounted a bit of the relevance of the minutes. And I think if we needed to distill this down, I think there's still going to be some work for the Fed to convince markets that they mean business with the flexible average inflation targeting to look beyond initial inflationary pressures.
And separately, while you mentioned some of this data, ISM figures suggest that U.S. recovery is on a strong footing. But with such rapid growth in manufacturing and services, are those numbers likely to cause excessive inflationary pressures?
That's a good question. And in fact, if we look, even if we cast our eyes a bit more widely, we would see that in many places, factory gate prices are rising. So you are definitely right. It does suggest pockets of inflationary pressures, particularly from the cost push end. So costs are going to rise. So initially, it means profit margins are going to get eroded. Household discretionary income is going to take a hit. But whether that goes on with that kind of virtuous, velocity in the economy to create enough circulation to also bring demand up with it, wages and profits. That part remains quite questionable. And I think it's going to be patchy. Some firms would be able to, some would not. And so central banks would be left, I think, between the devil and the deep blue sea, because they get costs that rise, but they don't get the demand that comes with it.
And when we talk about growth in general, Vishnu, the IMF GDP growth projections for 2021 suggest a wide divergence here between developed and low-income economies. Could you give us some insight into what is going to be some factors that contribute to this divergence?
Let me try to link it up with the last question. Because I was going to say, the problem would be inflation would be uneven. And then the IMF's point is, growth is going to be very uneven, which is why inflation will be uneven as well. And I think they make a very good point, because they say, let's not break out the champagne bottle, because the IMF also conceded that growth has come in much stronger for 2020 because the second half recovery was better than expected. And it's expected to continue into 2021. But it has then become a problem of affluence and excess. Affluent nations were better able to manage COVID. They're better able to contain, and they're also better able to get access to vaccines as well as cheap financing. So they're going to ride out this crisis much better, whereas the vaccination process is very uneven, as we know. It is very different in different parts of the world, which is exactly why the growth forecast for low-income countries were actually revised down substantially, whereas US had its bumped up by 3.3 percentage points. So that tells us everything we need to know.
And Vishnu, taking a look at India, given the surge in virus cases and pressures on India's economy, what did you make of the RBI's decision to keep rates unchanged yesterday?
I am so sorry to bring up a rock again, but I'll tell you, RBI is also between a rock and a hard place. The interesting thing is they said there's a lot more uncertainty about growth, but they have not revised down growth forecasts substantially yet. You know, they've shown their hand in saying that inflationary pressures could be to the both sides, could be upside, downside. And so they pretty much are suggesting that very little more they can do on rates. However, they gave a name and they christened their bond buying to essentially say, look, we're going to have QE, you know, 1 trillion rupees worth of QE in the second quarter of this year. And that QE is how it's sort of a backdoor for them to manage bonds. And so it's a masked dovish stance that's made to appear more neutral than it is.
And what do you make of the impacts of the move by the Chinese regulators to curb lending growth, the slowest increase in 15 years?
I think that part really needs nuance. I mean, like the IMF alluded to, aggregates tend to conceal a lot of things. So in aggregate, it does look like they are tightening. But I think the reality is twofold. One is we've had a huge bump up in Chinese lending last year to deal with COVID. So when they say they don't want it to increase a lot more, it's not necessarily a clamp down. It's just saying we're keeping things steady now that the economy is steadying. But also in the details, I think they're very, very aware of froth in the asset markets, particularly property markets. So they want to pare back in some areas. But in their growth areas of high tech, 5G, so on and so forth, they're still going to plow in quite a bit of credit. So they're hoping to re-divert credit rather than increase their credit risk to a point of Minsky moment. So they're avoiding financial risks.
Right. And Vishnu, jumping closer to Malaysia here, we're taking a look at Singapore. Where do you see the Monetary Authority of Singapore setting direction for the Singapore dollar this year? Do you have a range in mind?
I think what they're going to do is they're going to hold the policy bands steady at zero appreciation bias, which they set last March. So since last March, the trade-weighted Singapore dollar has had no appreciation bias. It's within the same band. It's supposed to be within the same band. I think they're going to continue that for the rest of this year. But what does that mean for the Sing dollar as we know it more intimately? That's typically the Sing dollar against the US dollar. That can be still very volatile to either way, and it's more dependent on the dollar trend, because then the trade-weighted basket would mean that the dollar Sing can be at very different levels. So MAS is actually holding the boat steady on a trade-weighted basis, but what happens to the Sing dollar is going to be influenced a lot more by what goes on globally and in the US.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Vishnu. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us a bit of a picture of international markets, most of which appear to be holding steady. But his comments about India were interesting. It's kind of a masked dovish stance
there. But also that the conversation we had about inflation, right? Uneven inflation, uneven growth, and more inequality in essence, right? And also all this seems to be contingent on the vaccine rollout, which is something we have touched on the show before, that growth targets seem to be affected by the vaccine rollout in a particular country.
Yeah, so inflation and economic growth will be uneven across the world, and we post COVID, we're going to see this K-shaped economies, widening.
Some other news that we've seen here, and particularly exciting news from the social media point of view. Sources have told Bloomberg that Twitter actually held discussion in recent months to buy audio app Clubhouse for about $4 billion. Now, the discussions are no longer ongoing, and it was unclear why they stalled, according to the report. But this news does come out after Clubhouse has reportedly to be in talks to raise funding from investors in a round valuing the business at about $4 billion. After the talks with Twitter failed to proceed, Clubhouse began to explore whether it made sense to raise financing at the valuation instead. So whether it was this valuation came up from the discussions with Twitter, or whether Twitter thought it was too expensive and Clubhouse was like, hey, we're going to go to the market and see whether they like our $4 billion valuation.
Clubhouse recently reported 10 million weekly active users. It has seen its popularity surge after appearances by billionaires like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, and of course as more people took to it during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, Twitter also has its own live audio feature, Spaces, which it aims to make available for all its users this month. Facebook's also exploring one too, as well as LinkedIn and Slack have also said that they're working on similar features for their networks.
Yeah, but for $4 billion, this is like chump change for the likes of Facebook and Google. So I wonder if an acquisition could be in the works here.
Yeah, I mean, chump change is one, but, you know, whether it makes sense is another, right? And another, well, I guess, very exciting piece of news for us, according to FT, Grab is reportedly going public in New York via the biggest SPAC merger to date. I say exciting because it's, well, it started in Malaysia, right? But now it's a Singaporean company. But anyway, the deal would reportedly value this super app at $35 billion. I was just thinking about it. I think if it was going to be listed in Malaysia, it would be, what, the biggest company listed on our stock exchange?
Yeah, that would probably be about right. I'm just quickly taking a look at Uber's stock right now. And I wanted to take a look at the valuation. Uber's valuation right now is $106 billion. So that'll be interesting. And it'll be interesting to see how much Uber realizes from this deal as well, because they do have a stake in Grab at the last record.
The SPAC in question is owned by Altimeter Capital. It's a US-based tech-focused investment firm. And Grab and Altimeter are set to possibly reach an agreement by the end of the week. And of course, more on all of this, we're also going to be speaking with Varun Mittal, global emerging markets fintech leader from EY, later on at about 8:30. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But right now, some messages. And then after that, the viability of Putrajaya as an international recreational city. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.